This is the Adam Gold Show.
You must certainly are. Most certainly are, not must certainly are. Gosh. One day I'll be good at this. It's the Adam Gold Show. That is Dennis Cox on the main room strings. Well done. You do so many things so well, sir.
Must certainly am.
Can we start over after that debacle? Just, gosh, so bad. Who's working on just a handful of hours of sleep?
Me?
Yeah. I know. You got up early. You did a show.
Very early.
I was going to say before I got up, but no. I was already up. Hurricanes played last night. We had a very exciting Carolina Hurricanes win. The Eagles went to 8-0 last night. We have a World Series where the Phillies are now on the brink of elimination. I guess, really, it's probably better. The Astros one win away from wrapping up their second World Series title in the last 6 years. There is a lot going on. Kyrie Irving got himself suspended yesterday.
Yeah.
There is a ton of stuff to talk about. A couple of quick things. Dennis,
yes.
Welcome to the program today.
Oh, thank you.
I haven't seen you since Wednesday. Actually, I saw you yesterday, but for the sake of other people not knowing. Let's see what else we have. We have a big weekend of football.
We do.
We're going to have to talk about that. We got the Panthers and the Bengals. We're going to talk to Darren Gant. We've got Luke DeCock coming in. We're going to talk ACC football. Carolina's going to Virginia, where traditionally it's been a problem, but the last few times hasn't been.
No.
And Carolina's better than Virginia. They shouldn't have a problem at all. We have State and Wake.
Yeah.
That's a big game. I'm curious to see which NC State philosophy is going to show up. I've been saying this since the beginning of the season. What are we going to try and be? Not who we are. What are we going to try and be this year? And when they had to, they decided to play offense, which was very good for MJ Morris. So, ton of things to do. We welcome Dennis in for the program today. And then I don't know if we get back to normal on Monday or not.
I have no idea.
Nobody does.
I have no
idea. Nobody has a clue. It's a jigsaw puzzle. All right, let's start. Train of thought could be an issue today. I don't know why. I don't know why I think that. One game away from the Houston Astros' second World Series title in 6 years. They win it 3-2 last night. First time in the World Series that a team was not ahead 5-0. First time. In the other four games, a team led 5-0. Amazing. Great defensive plays at the end, but how about the exploits of rookie shortstop Jeremy Peña?
2-2 the count as Peña lifts one in the air to left field. It's hit pretty well. Schwarber's back at the wall, and we'll watch it go. Jeremy Peña lofts one into the seats in left for a home run, and the Astros go on top 2-1.
Peña had an RBI single in the top of the first that gave the Astros a 1-0 lead. Then he hits the home run. He was also in the middle of the inning that had the Astros tack on a run in the top of the eighth. 3-for-4, a home run, couple of runs batted in. He is hitting .381 in the series. Stands a pretty good chance. I wouldn't call it automatic. Pretty good chance of being the MVP. He's had a super postseason. Remember when Carlos Correa was their young shortstop of the future?
Ages ago.
It was. It was all of a year ago. Correa spent this year in Minnesota, and he's going to be a free agent again. But, man, this Jeremy Peña kid is a pretty good ball player. So Houston staked Justin Verlander to that 1-0 lead in the first. And remember game one of the series when they staked Verlander to a 5-0 lead, and he got crushed from that point on. So what happens to the first batter he faces after getting the 1-0 lead? Kyle Schwarber hits a home run. Justin Verlander hung tough.
I mean, initially you're like, you know, that sucks. I mean, as a starting pitcher, been there, done that. It just sucks because of the moment, and obviously all the questions and weight. But you know, you have to rely on the hundreds of starts and the thousands of pitches I've thrown before, and just kind of say, okay, like, I've given up leadoff home runs before. Let me bear down, and you know, that's not going to be indicative of what's going to happen the rest of the game by any means. Let's see what happens.
You certainly hope not, but when you have Verlander's World Series history, it's natural for doubts to creep in, and I'm sure that they did, but he pitched very well from there on out. Dusty Baker is now one win away from his first World Series, but he has been there before. He has been one win away from a World Series title. As a matter of fact, it was 20 years ago when he had the Giants one win away. They also had a Game 6 lead, but they were in Anaheim against the Angels. And then they got beat by a rookie pitcher named John Lackey in Game 7. I think the Giants just got blown out in Game 7. But they blew a lead. I believe a seventh-inning lead they blew it in Game 6. All right, the Carolina Hurricanes are now 7-2-1 on the season after last night's 4-3 shootout win over the Lightning. Another game that sent the Canes' Twitter into a free-fall. By the way, Dennis, do you ever, like, peruse Canes' Twitter during games?
I mean, yeah, it's kind of my job for Bally.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so yes, I do.
Canes' Twitter is, they're beside themselves when things don't go right. I mean, like, every game is a referendum on everybody.
Of course.
But it's always entertaining. But Carolina was utterly dominant last night. They were the better team than Tampa. At 5-on-5, I didn't think it was close.
Yeah.
I mean, Tampa scores 2 power play goals. It seemed like, other than that, Carolina was all over them, creating chances. Can somebody score into a yawning cage, please?
Oh, gosh.
Jesper Fast, Paul Stastny, Jordan Staal. Seth Jarvis, I think, had a wide-open net chance. He had scored a goal, but it could have been 2. My God, the Hurricanes could have scored 6 goals last night. Mm-hmm. Could have done the same thing against Washington a couple of days ago, Monday. But that's how it is. This team, however, does seem to have a knack of figuring a way through. So you're down 3-2. Your power play, your penalty kill has already yielded 2 goals, both in the second period. Second periods have been a problem too, by the way, for Carolina. And Brett Pesce goes to the box, although I didn't think Brett Pesce did anything to go to the box, but whatever. Pesce goes to the penalty box with about 7.5 minutes left, and the Lightning power play with a lead is coming on the ice. Brady Shea makes a play at the blue line, goes the other way with Sebastian Aho. Jesper Fast goes to the net. Shea gets enough room to beat Vasilevsky, and it's 3-3. We head to overtime. Canes waste the power play in overtime, but still they win it in the shootout. Tremendous game, performance, better result. And I think unsung here is that Teuvo Teravainen and Sebastian Aho each scored in the shootout.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's Aho's first shootout goal since 2017.
Yes, it's his 4th all-time. But yeah, they don't even use him in the shootout.
Well, yeah, he's been 0 for his last 8.
that's not a lot, though, 0 for 8.
No, but still.
He just doesn't get used in the shootout.
Well, it's funny. I remember Jacob Slavin early in his career was great on shootouts, and don't know why he's not using
it. I think he is still part of the mix, but I thought it was tremendous that in many ways, Teravainen scored, because they're about to lose because Ross Colton had made it 1-0 in the 4th inning. Yeah, Ross Colton, did he get a Golden Globe for last night?
I think so.
Good job for him. All right, we're going to talk to Rod Brindamore in 5 minutes, so let's move away from this. While all of that was going on, the Philadelphia Eagles were going to 8-0 on the season. A surprisingly mediocre 29-17 win over the Texans. Probably not Philly's best game of the year. They did what they had to do. They put it out of reach with an early fourth quarter touchdown. Jalen Hurts threw both of his touchdown passes in the second half. It was a 14-14 tie after 30 minutes. Here's Hurts on the record.
I know it's special for the city of Philadelphia, you know, and I mean I've been 8-0 before and lost the national championship, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, just take it day by day, you know what I'm saying? Take it day by day. We haven't accomplished anything yet, you know, and it's a day by day thing of us trying to grow every day. I think that's truly what it's about.
The head coach, by the way, is also 8-0, Nick Sirianni.
Yeah, it's just the next one. You know, at this particular point, being 8-0 is sweet, right? And, you know, it beats the alternative of being 7-1 or 6-2, right? And so we know that our goal wasn't to go 8-0. Our goal is to take one game at a time. And that's our goal. And so is it good to be able to have this long weekend instead of 8-0? Of course. But we know that we're going to get back to work on Monday and go attack this next game against Washington like we attacked this last game against Houston.
It's sad to me that we've already started the talk of can Philly go 17-0. It bothers me, right? But
well, what else is? Never mind. I'm not going to.
But they do have a pretty soft schedule. I mean, there are some tough games. They've got the Titans left. They still have another game with the Cowboys. That'll be in Dallas. I think they have another one with the Giants. So there are difficult games left on their schedule. So I'm not saying that they basically play, Eastern Kentucky the rest of the way. But it is silly from this standpoint. Like, I know the Eagles are good, but I don't think anybody believes that the Eagles are a juggernaut. I mean, there's really just one of those in the NFL, maybe two if we assign the Chiefs the same status. The Bills are the juggernaut. I think the Eagles are very good. I think they are the best in the NFC, but I don't think, and because I don't think they're a juggernaut, I have a hard time seeing them go 17-0 no matter how bad the schedule is. And by the way, who you play does matter. I heard that this morning that, well, it's not the Eagles' fault that their schedule has been soft. Nobody's blaming the Eagles, but who the Eagles have played to this point actually does matter.
Should they schedule better out of conference?
They tried.
Is that what the committee wants?
They tried to schedule better out of conference. All right, real quick before we hit to Rod Brindamore. This is a great story about conference realignment, especially for those who always push back on basketball not mattering. It appears that Gonzaga is in talks with the Big 12 about leaving the West Coast Conference and joining the Big 12. Now, there's some talk about Gonzaga starting a football program as well. Whatever. If that's what happens, that's what happens. But we all understand that Gonzaga would be doing this to play basketball in a better league. So I will just, there's a number of things I want to point out here. The first is, if this happens, George Kliavkoff and the Pac-10 or 12 or 8 or however many teams will be left should shutter their doors immediately. If you are the Pac-12 and you allow Gonzaga to join the Big 12, then you're done. You're just flat finished as a league. Especially when you're losing UCLA. You have to add Gonzaga if that's a possibility. All right, that's that. Apparently they also talked to the Big East. Which, I know, I saw your eyes. I saw your eyes, Dennis. You went, what? The Big East? They're in Spokane, Washington. The Big East put up a middle finger to geography a long time ago. Mm. Creighton in Omaha, Nebraska is in the Big East.
Denver and lacrosse plays in the Big East.
There you go.
See, there it is.
Marquette in Milwaukee, Wisconsin plays in the Big East.
Yeah.
Right? DePaul in Chicago is in the Big East. There is no geography in the Big East. It has nothing to do with geography. It is simply a basketball league.
Mm-hmm.
Gonzaga would fit beautifully. Butler in Indianapolis is in the Big East. It would be extreme but I appreciate the Big East for exploring the possibility. But I think Gonzaga needs this move more than the Big 12 needs this move. I know they're talking about, oh, the Big 12 will clearly be the best basketball league. Okay, I'm not getting into silly debates. But I've said for a long time, there's a reason why Gonzaga has not won a national championship beyond that it's hard to win a national championship. The reason is that Gonzaga plays in a conference that does not make them better. Every other team inside their league, they have to get better over the course of the season. Otherwise, you lose a ton of games. Gonzaga doesn't have to do that. At best, there are two losses in their league. At best. If they're really good, they shouldn't lose any except maybe at St. Mary's. That's it. It's the only time they should ever lose. Because the rest of the league isn't even close to their level. But this would be a game changer, and it would help Gonzaga basketball. Now we got a hockey game tonight.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
All right, Rod Brind'Amour, how do we talk about that double minor without getting you in trouble? Because to me, Jalen Chatfield, maybe I saw it wrong, I didn't think Jalen Chatfield committed a penalty on Hayden Fleury, and then somehow they tacked on additional two in the scrum that I believe was initiated by Tampa. Is there a way to talk about this without getting you in trouble?
Depends who's listening, I guess.
Well, nobody's listening.
You're right. I mean, I've kind of gotten to the point where it's just at some point it's going to be, you know, not me, but we need like a player that has clout to say we got to change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think any of the kind of recommendations that I've made over the year might actually work, you know. But when I do it, it just sounds like sour grapes. But when the guys that are playing say enough's enough, because it's impacting the game, like totally. And it's, you know, like we've talked about this at length. I
mean, right.
We're refereeing in the dark ages, essentially. And there's the technology is so good. And these guys are great. I mean, they all look like penalties to me when we watch it live.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're like, okay, penalty. And then you see it 2 seconds later and you're like, wait a minute, that's not a penalty. And then that leads to something else. It leads to the game being impacted too greatly. You know, you want the guys out there to settle it, not, you know, not based on something that's avoidable. So these calls, you know, that led to 5-on-3 and another incident later in the game. Like, it's just the embellishment, all that stuff. You just look at it, you see it, then it's clearly, you know, it'd be settled a little differently, I guess. So we'll get through it at some point, but the players are going to have to be the ones to, you know, say, okay, wait, is there a better way to do this? And there clearly is. So, and again, this is not against the officials. I think they do a tremendous job, tremendous. I just think the technology is there to help them out, and we can do it efficiently.
Yeah, embellishment could have been called, but it was not called. But it's all right. I think Ross Colton has a Golden Globe in the mail coming to him. Here's the thing that I don't want to get lost in all of this, and it's a good thing that you guys did end up winning the game, is because I thought you guys were really good last night. I mean, at 5-on-5, that might be the best game that you guys have played for 60 minutes, no?
Yeah, we've had maybe two or a game and a half where it hasn't been good 5-on-5, in my opinion. So that game was solid. Like you just said, it against that team, that's been, you know, and we have had games. It felt a little bit eerily similar to a lot of the games we've had against them,
mm-hmm.
where we're going along great, and you know that goalie's keeping them in, and then something crazy happens and we end up on a 5-on-3. Like it just reminded me of, you know, playing in the playoffs and things like that. But, you know, the difference this time around was when we were able to get the win. So I like the way we were able to kind of take the blows, you know, or the bad bounces, or however you want to look at it, and just kind of park it and just keep moving forward.
You had a lot of chances to score, and this is not just last night, but it kind of goes back a few games. I saw Jesper Fast, Paul Stastny, and Jordan Staal all look up at the rafters after missing what I'm sure they believe were tap-in putts for goals. Do you just laugh those off at the end of the day?
Well, it's a lot easier when you at least get the 2 points.
Right.
Those ones sting, you know, big time if you lose the game. And those are the ones that you don't sleep at night. You probably don't anyway as a player because, you know, you want to score. And, you know, I think Jarvie had one too, actually.
Yeah.
So we had, you know, like you said, more than our share to just put that game away. But, you know, that doesn't always work that way. And traditionally with us, it's always been a little harder. And so it's just part of it. I think it's actually helped us in a way because we have had a lot of games like that. It's not like that's new to us. We've seen the, you know, just the way we play and maybe just the way we have unfortunate around the net sometimes. We don't get a lot of goals on our scoring chances like we should. So we need a few extras, and I think the guys understand that, but it's still frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, the Washington game could have been 5 or 6-2, and it was we needed a shootout for that one. Two good things I thought, even in the shootout, and we'll start with Teuvo Teravainen, who I thought actually played, especially defensively, a pretty good game. It was his pass to Stastny that Paul actually slid back through the crease after beating Vasilevskiy. But Teravainen scoring the goal that you had to have to keep the shootout going, can something like that translate for him?
Well, you're going to build on that and hope it does. I personally don't know if one game bleeds to the next at all. You know, it shouldn't really. You know, good or bad, it's just, you know, you got another job to do. But as a player, you know, seeing it going to net and really help, like you said, in a crucial time for the group, you know, you hope that makes him feel good about, you know, his game. And, you know, if you feel better about what you're doing, generally you play better. So hopefully that jumpstarts him a little bit.
And Sebastian Aho, who you never use in a shootout, and we needed almost two shootouts to get to him. But that was a nice little move. I guess he was watching Kuznetsov the other night. I've never seen anybody slower in a shootout succeed. But Seabass pretty much slowed it down to a crawl and made a great move.
It was a great move. And the thing about beating that goalie is you have to, you know, Teravainen's move was very, very special too.
Yeah.
You know, he had a bunch of fakes in there, a bunch of, like, maybe I'll shoot, maybe I'll do that. It's the only way you beat the goalie. I got, he's that good. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I don't know that he's let into in a shootout before. Like, I mean, I'd have to go back and look. But it's, you know, it was a good move, and you have to pull it off against it.
All right, final thing, and we all can agree that Martin Natchez right now is playing his best hockey, but let's talk really quickly about Brady Shea, who has been tremendous really since he got here. I heard you talking about it last night. But the play that he makes at the blue line on shorthanded really leads to the goal, and Jesper Fast being available as sort of a decoy on the right side probably helped it out as well.
Well, there's a lot on that play, right? And you touched on it. The end part is great, but the stand at the line and then the read and being able to jump your guy and, you know, then jump up in the ice. But that goal doesn't happen if you know, Cookie doesn't go to the net because it doesn't drag that D back. And, you know, then you have to have the great pass and the great shot. So there's a lot of things that go into it, but that's, you know, what you have to have. And that was obviously a huge goal at that time of the game.
Good luck against the Sabres tonight. They're just scoring like 4.5 goals a game.
Yeah. It's like a high, you know, some really special players, big too, that can fly. And they're playing, when you watch them play, it's like they're just going for it. You know, they're kind of playing with none to lose. That's what it kind of feels like. So they're going to be dangerous, that's for sure.
The one and only Darren Gant, Panthers.com. So you traded Christian McCaffrey and discovered a running game. How does that work?
Yes, I alone was responsible for it. Thank you very much. It's bow down before me, all you fantasy football GMs. I finally got to live the dream. It's interesting. I think part of it is Deontay Foreman has been that guy in the past.
Yep.
I mean, if you look at what he did last year in Tennessee, when Derrick Henry goes down, it's kind of, you know, it's almost as if that's why they brought him here, you know, as the plan in case, you know, Christian wasn't available for a different reason. But he's done this before, and he's a big physical back, leans on people, creates contact on his own. So, you know, he's a different kind of back. It's more old school. He's more of the Stephen Davis type, who we've obviously seen come in and do some good things here. So, you know, we'll see what it looks like in the long term. I just think with Christian, you know, as I'm sure you guys have talked about a lot, it almost just felt like it was time. It was people
yes.
who needed different things in a relationship. And, you know, Christian is in a spot where, you know, it's probably the perfect place, honestly, mm-hmm. for him and his skill set out in San Francisco. And what they needed was draft capital, because as they look in the next offseason, they're obviously going to be looking for quarterbacks. And now they've got more picks with which to try to acquire one.
Darren Gant, Panthers.com, is joining us. I actually termed the – I guess we haven't spoken since the trade. I actually have termed the McCaffrey trade a mercy trade. It's sort of like – the animal is suffering, and because you love the animal, then we put the animal down. So they decided that the relationship between the Panthers and McCaffrey, well, not a bad relationship, just his career here needed meaning. So we put this career down, and we assigned meaning to the rest of his career, because it just didn't look like it was going. This team was going to be good enough. By the time his skills may be eroded in 3 years or so. But I am curious.
Well, that took a dark turn, Adam.
It did.
I'm not going to lie.
I have a lot of time to think about these things.
I wasn't expecting.
I have a long drive to and from the show, the station, every day. So I have a lot of time to reflect on things. But I think it was a good trade for both sides. I appreciated
sure.
that the Panthers got some draft capital back. And we'll talk about that draft capital in a bit. But is there there has to be a different feel around that team. And it has nothing to do with, you know, we finally got rid of Christian McCaffrey, because that's obviously not the case.
Right.
But there has to be just a little bit of a different feel with Steve Wilks and with some other people who have basically now have no choice but to step up and contribute.
Right. And you know, I made the analogy the other day in the mailbag, which you can read at Panthers.com. It's almost like a foxhole mentality. And, you know, when you're in a battlefield situation, the guys in your foxhole are your closest friends, because they're the only ones that can save your life.
Right.
Some days. And there's a little bit of that. I mean, it's almost like what's left around here, and everybody's looking around like, well, we're the only one. So they have, I mean, and I do think a good bit of credit goes to Steve Wilks. One of the things
yes.
I'm always careful about, I think there's a reflexive thing in sports journalism or sports media. It's not all journalism. To when somebody's gone to make everything that was wrong that guy's fault, you know, you can disagree with the Matt Rhule idea or era and still recognize that some of the stuff he put in place here is valid, and some of the things he was saying was true. It just wasn't getting done. And I think Steve's done a good job of kind of grabbing guys up and saying, hey, this can still matter. It does still matter for us. And for the people in that foxhole, it does still matter. Steve Wilks is coaching for a future, you know, and every player on this field right now is the same way. But I'll be honest with you. I mean, last week in Atlanta, I've seen, you know, after the pick six right before halftime, I've seen Carolina Panthers teams of recent vintage, not just Matt Rhule teams, but other teams, lose that game by 20.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not lose that game by 20. They were in position to win it a couple of times.
Should have won it, to be honest. And I heard yeah. it again this morning. I heard Mike Greenberg on ESPN say if DJ Moore keeps his helmet on, the Panthers win. Maybe. I mean, Eddie Pinheiro did miss the same field goal that is an extra point in overtime. So I don't blame DJ Moore at all. Not one single bit. I don't blame DJ Moore. I mean, if you wanted to blame anybody, and I don't even like that, because kickers are, he's not trying to miss it.
Yeah.
You know, Eddie Pinheiro needs to make either the 48-yard extra point, which is almost, you know, 80% pretty much for NFL kickers these days, or make the one in overtime and then the Panthers still win. So I'm not even going to play that game.
Listen, multiple things can be true at once. DJ should have left his helmet on. Eddie should have made the kick. Brian Byrne should have tackled Marcus Mariota in the backfield rather than letting him scramble 30 yards in overtime to set up the game-winning field goal.
That's another good thing.
P.J. Walker shouldn't have thrown a pick six right before halftime. So, you know, there's plenty of that to go around if you want to go down that road. I mean, and listen, I get it. We've done this for a long time, you and I, so you know how the game goes. I mean, Eddie is still – I was kind of amused that there were people thinking Eddie's going to be cut. This was the 33rd kicker in the league, you know, when your regular kicker got hurt in the preseason. So he was the first guy off the recycling pile. And, you know, he's the best available at this point. What are you going to find that's better than Eddie Pinheiro right now? You're not. He's in the top half of the league in field goal percentage. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we can be mad about things and also have some perspective.
All right, here's some perspective with Darren Gamp. And I've been talking about this now, and I came to this realization, and I think it was when the Robbie Anderson, Robbie with a Y, blew up on the sideline.
With a Y, with an I, who can
remember? No, with a Y. It's not new Robbie, it's old Robbie. I love Steve Wilks. I think they should take the interim tag off him now. I'm not concerned with how many games they win. It's easy for me to say that here, and I freely admit that. But I think it matters to him.
You need to spend somebody else's money.
Exactly. I think being the head coach of the Carolina Panthers would matter to him, not as a job, but as sort of as a mission. Something that, because I think the organization means more to him because he's from here. I think that matters. I think I'm using as an example the head coach of our hockey team here. Rod Brind'Amour wanted to be the head coach of the Hurricanes, not of an NHL team, of the Hurricanes. I think this would matter to Steve Wilks. I think he's a great guy to be the front face of your franchise.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell. And people ask me what I think it's going to, you know, this thing could change six, eight times between now and the end of the season. And right now everybody thinks, oh, you got to get an offensive mind. My thing on offensive guys is that supply is kind of picked over now. And for every great young coach you think you're getting, there's a couple who may not be as great. They don't all get to be Shanahan or McVay. Mm-hmm. So it's weird. I do think Steve has done some things in the last couple of weeks, and you could tell in that post-game locker room the other week after the win here that it was just different. And the feeling, it had been – right or wrong, I mean, at the end, coming down the stretch of the Matt Rhule era, there was a weight on this franchise. And, you know, everybody kind of felt it. And, you know, you had a suspicion that it probably wasn't going to turn around anytime soon, especially with the injuries and the quarterback situation. But, you know, in that post-game locker room, it was all lifted. And, you know, they weren't supposed to beat Tom Brady ever, especially with P.J. Walker at quarterback, especially with an interim coach after firing one 5 games in a year. None of this stuff was supposed to happen. And I think that feeling in there was real. I mean, the guys have talked about it in the days since. And a lot of that's got to do with Steve. He does carry himself with a competence, with a gravity that, you know, is able to keep what could be a frantic situation calm. And that's a credit to him. I mean, that's what he exudes, and, you know, that kind of calm, competent leadership. And, you know, that's what they needed in this situation. Cause whether, you know, it's an interim coach, it's an interim quarterback, it's an interim running back, it's a lot of interim pieces right now, to be honest, with the Carolina Panthers. So I think those guys that are still here are just trying to make the best of it.
Let's talk about the interim quarterback before we wrap this up with Darren Gant at Darren Gant with 2 T's on Twitter, Panthers.com. The interim quarterback. Maybe P.J. Walker is the right guy for this situation for right now, and the Baker Mayfield era or the Sam Darnold era is simply over, and we can just let PJ, assuming he stays healthy, roll the rest of the season and be done with it.
What a time to be alive. Think about that for a second. Think about the words that just fell out of your face hole, Adam. I mean, this is Philip J. Walker, who was going to be cut at the end of training camp if Sam Darnold and Matt Corral don't get hurt in the preseason. I mean, that's just that's not an opinion. That's a thing that was going to happen. And now my coworker at Panthers.com, Augusta Stone, wrote a story about PJ this week that included comparisons to Tom Brady, who he beat, Patrick Mahomes, who name-checked him for the pass at the end of the Atlanta game the other day, and the fact that if PJ had enough attempts to qualify, he would be 11th in the league in passer rating right now, right behind Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson. I mean, those four names just came out of my head in regards to PJ Walker. I mean, think about that for a second. None of this is supposed to be happening. So, PJ, to his credit, and I almost said bless his heart, but he doesn't deserve that. PJ, to his credit, has seen some things and lived through them. He was in Indianapolis when Andrew Luck decided to retire at the end of a training camp. So what's going on here right now isn't even the weirdest thing he's been a part of. He's in the XFL, for God's sake. So, yes, in that situation, I mean, much like with Steve Wilks, I think his personality lends itself to kind of the chaos that's swirling around him, because to him it ain't all that chaotic, and he's played well. I mean, I may or may not have been a little sarcastic the other day during the Rams game when I said let PJ cook. But at the same time, in that Rams game, they handcuffed him. They didn't let him throw downfield because they didn't want him to make a mistake. I mean, in his career at that point, he had 2 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Seems reasonable. But in the last couple of weeks, it's an old-school plan. You run the ball and you let the guy throw downfield and get yards in chunks. It's very Dan Henning, Jake DeLome when you look at it that way, because that 0-3 offense was all based on handing it to the big back and running play action off of it and moving the ball downfield.
It's also how the Raiders became the Raiders. Run the ball and then take shots down the field, and it's worked.
Yep.
I still can't believe Atlanta allowed DJ Moore behind the defense, but, hey, that's an Atlanta problem.
Hey, he split two guys. I mean, that wasn't Haruki Nakamura. That was an offensive player making a play. Come on.
I know. Oh, that was great. Darren Gant, you're the best. I appreciate your time, my friend.
Man, anytime.
You got it. At Darren Gant with 2 T's for extra talent.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Wendy's new French toast sticks are so delicious, some are saying that they're better than their mom's breakfast.
Excuse me, did you just say Wendy's new French toast sticks are better than my breakfast?
Mom, is that you?
Answer the question.
I said some people are saying that because they're so crispy on the outside and fluffy on the inside and perfect in every way.
Uh-huh. And what do you think?
I think it's time to tell people to choose wisely. Choose Wendy's new sweet and crispy homestyle French toast sticks.
That's still not an answer.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.